Oh, my audio sound. Or yeah, it's better now. Woohoo!
Woo!
Whoa!
Hey, everybody!
Woo!
Woo!
Hello.
How's it going, everyone?
It's good.
Pretty good.
Sweet.
Thanks for having me. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. We had to get you back on for sure. I whenever I text Kellen to get on the show, I was like, hey, we're going to talk about this coming up. And Kellen's always like, I didn't see any of that. I saw these things though. And I was like, I've never heard of these things. So
I did my homework.
We happened to reach a nexus where we were able to actually all watch the same films.
Sweet.
So we're in good shape tonight. So, without further ado, let's get to the first film of the night, shall we? The first movie we're going to talk about tonight is the new film, the new Disney Pixar film. This is from this year. This is Luca.
We do not go anywhere near the surface. Got it?
Everything good is above the surface.
Walking.
Air!
The sky, clouds, the sun.
Whoa, don't look at it. Just kidding. Definitely look at it.
Have you ever gone to the human town?
Yeah. I'm kind of an expert.
That ended more abruptly than I remembered. Hey, that's some from the trailer of Luca. This is the new film from Pixar Animation Studios. You can see this right now on Disney Plus for no additional charge. Just like with Onward and with Soul, this movie is complimentary with your Disney Plus subscription. So if you got it, go over there and check it out right now. So this movie, like I said, came out recently over the past weekend, and it's directed by Enrico Casarosa, who is a new director for Pixar. First time director. Written by Jesse Andrews and Mike Jones. Mike Jones, we've got the voices of Jacob Tremblay, Jack Dylan Grazer, Emma Berman, some people I know, some people I don't know. Saviero Raimondo, Maya Rudolph, Jim Gaffigan, and a few others. So this is a movie about a little sea monster boy named Luca, who is... Wikipedia says it's 1950s, 1960s era Italy. It's not really important what year it is. It's just timeless, nostalgic Italy. And Luca and his family live, boy, not that far off the coast of this island, I gotta say.
I'm
so surprised they've never been found, and they presumably have like no neighbors at all. I'm a little confused the world building of this film with the sea monsters.
Yeah, same.
So Luca is a fish shepherd. And he has a boring ass life watching fish, and he's like, I want to go up to the surface. And so one day he does just that. He meets a kid, an older kid named Alberto. At least I perceive him as older, a little bit of an older kid named Alberto, who is like, yeah, I go up there all the time. So they become friends, and they form this this bond, and he can't tell his parents, and his parents find out. And so they flee even further into this surface lifestyle. During which they decide to enter this local race to win a Vespa and thus win their freedom and independence and the ability to determine their own destinies. So that's a quick setup of Luca, basically. I gotta say, I don't have much of an opinion on this movie, so I'm not going to talk very long about my opinions out of the gate. I think if I were to rate it anything, I would just give it 3 stars. I think it is a very generic movie. I think it is not anywhere close to Pixar's best. I just wasn't into it, I suppose. There's moments that I like. There's things it does that I think are fine. There's things it does that I'm just meh about. And I mostly just am a shell of myself with this movie. I feel nothing. So that's all I have to say about it. I have other thoughts to contribute once we get into the plot a little bit more. But overall, I'd say this is a 3-star film. So if you got Disney Plus and you have kids, my kids love it. My son now pretends he's a sea monster. He's got a tail, and we're all on a boat, and he's in the water, and that's what he likes to. So, A+ from my 5-year-old son, but me, the adult, with a little bit more of a standard of quality, I say 3 stars. Dustin, I'm gonna let you drive here. This is where I get off.
Yeah. So I'll just start with my star rating. 2.5 for me. I mean, I didn't think it was just fine, which is kind of what a 3 symbolizes. It's not as good as just fine. To me, and that's okay. Like, I think there's more about it that didn't work for me than did, but it has some really great ideas, and there are some positives here. I love the vocal performances, and I love, you know, obviously the animation's fantastic. And you know, I enjoy a lot about it. But ultimately I do feel like it's a bit of a misfire, which is really, it makes me sad because this is now added to the, you know, the last 4 Pixar films have been disappointments to me. And so now, you know, it's just kind of like, where do they go from here? I know the next one, you know, coming up, but you know, am I really all that interested anymore, or has Pixar lost his magic? So I don't know. But yeah, 2.5 for me. And I don't know if we want to get into spoilers or not, but I wrote some notes on some things, but I want to hear first from Kellen, what you thought about the film.
You know, kind of run of the mill. I think I'm just kind of realizing that, like, Pixar is not going to be making films that are, you know, big thinkers. They're not, I mean, they're all very thematically shallow, just there to teach a handful of lessons to kids. So, yeah. You know, that's why, was it Noah running around?
Yeah.
Thinking he's a, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, kids are going to get something from it. I don't know if we've talked about it before, but being in animation means that, like, I don't have a very good time watching it anymore. Some people, if you work in animation, will agree with me. And then some people will think I'm crazy, but I just feel like I'm working. I'm dissecting it visually more than I am, narrative wise, story wise. So I thought it was, having jumped in into a Pixar movie, I didn't see Soul. I did see Onward. So I'm kind of doing this, like, I'll pop in like 2 years later and see, you know, what it looks like. So I thought it was a nice stylistic diversion from the Pixar normal. They had a lot of fun faces and stuff, head constructions, the way that mouths worked was really interesting. So I agree with the 3. I mean, it's a very technically proficient movie. There's some, you know, metaphors in there, whether it be for, you know, I think there, you might be able to construe the whole movie as kind of like a coming out sort of thing. In fact, at the end, 2 characters just in the background are like, "Well, cool, we're fish people too, or sea monsters too."
Yeah.
So I just thought, you know, by the time it was done, I was like, if this wasn't on Disney Plus for free, I definitely wouldn't have gone to see it in the theaters. So,
yeah. I definitely read that same allegory into it.
Yeah.
I was watching.
It's hard not to.
And of course the director has said, it's not what we were doing at all. We were completely, you know, we're trying to market this as like a, you know, trying to keep this a platonic thing because these are children or whatever. It's like, okay, well, that's fine.
I just think that's, I think that's the easiest one to pull from it. Sure, I mean, it could literally be anything that is seen as like an outsider type of situation.
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. So it definitely has that to it that can absolutely be taken from the story for sure. Okay. Well, why don't we, I'm going to do this. Let's go into spoilers, because after this movie, we're going to the break anyway. So why don't we go ahead and say, tell everyone, if you've seen the film, stick around. We'll talk about the plot a little bit more. And then, if not, just catch us after the break and we'll move on to the next movies. Dustin, you said you had some points you wanted to, bring up regarding spoilers, regarding plot details.
So just I've got pull some, out his long list.
I do. It is actually quite long, quite extensive, but what I'm going to do, this is what I was doing today, Kellen, instead of working on our productive project here. I wrote a few notes, and they're not in any particular order. It's not like an order of grief. The thing that grieves me most and the things that don't are down the list. It's just random as they came to me. But the first thing, and we'll draw some comparisons to some other Pixar movies that I feel like work better, is the antagonist in this film. His name is Ercole. Ercole is, to me, annoying more than he is actually a villain or whatever. And so I guess the villain in this tends to be more internal. Like, it's like a we're longing for our freedom kind of a thing, and coming to terms with who we are and blah, blah, blah. And then fighting against parents and old regimes and blah, blah, blah. But there is, I mean, there is a villain, right? And so the most direct comparison may be to something like Anton Ego from Ratatouille. You know, he's this food critic that comes in. He's not really the antagonist of the film, but he certainly operates like it.
He sees his status quo threatened by our protagonists.
This is correct. And if you do compare the two, Ercole is very one-dimensional, whereas Anton Ego, we eventually get some layers to him. We get to see a little bit of like what life is like for him, what it was like for him, and what it will be for him. With Ercole, we don't really get that. We don't know what he's going to go on to do. We don't know what he was. We don't have much about him, so it's hard to care. You know, if we look at like Lotso Huggenbear, we get this nice flashback in Toy Story 3 where we get to see what his motivations are. Syndrome is a great example. I mean, he appears in the opening sequence and we get to know what it is that drives him to be this huge villain. Or maybe even if we go with somebody that we don't get to see as much of is like Randall from Monsters, Inc. Randall is, you know, obviously the film's antagonist, but his motivations are clear. It's, you know, striving to be seen as the best in your workplace. And so the motivations may be not super deep, and we don't really know like Randall's backstory, but we do know enough, and we relate to that quest that he has enough that it feels like he's an interesting villain. But then he also presents stakes to the characters. All of these characters I just mentioned present very real stakes. Maybe most notably Lotso, who's going to put everybody in a dang furnace. Like there are real stakes to all of this. Whereas Ercole, even though he has a harpoon at the end and he's like, I'm going to spear you, it doesn't feel like he's actually presenting much of a threat. Like, if he's just kind of there to be a bully. And so I feel like that makes him weak. And therefore kind of annoying more than like frightening.
I agree with your sentiment earlier where you said that he's kind of just like you said he's not the main villain. It's I would say the main villain is like the sentiment of humans on land towards sea creatures or sea monsters. He's kind of like the mini boss of the movie, if you want to use a video game allegory.
This is correct. The next thing I wrote on my list was that I didn't feel like the main trio here, Luca, Alberto, and Julia, were really all that interesting or memorable to me when compared to, again, other characters, Woody, Buzz, Mike and Sully. It's like you have these deep friendships that of course we're going to go out and buy the toys. We're going to go buy t-shirts with their faces on them. And like they're hugely marketable, but also super memorable. And I didn't feel like these characters really hit that for me. I liked them, but I didn't love them like I normally would with Pixar. If you look at like Wall-E, it's like, I love that guy. I have since the movie came out, have had a Wall-E on my desk. I love this guy. I didn't feel that same way here. And so I started trying to dissect like, well, why am I not really attaching to these characters as much? And one thing that I thought and helped me narratively here, because that's kind of where I'm stuck, is we know what they want. They want freedom, which is symbolized by this Vespa. They want to do their own thing. They want to break free from parental control, from blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that's sort of symbolized by this Vespa. And then the quest becomes win the race to win the Vespa, which I guess brings freedom, but it's like, it's almost like two or three steps removed from what they actually are wanting. It's not like an actual play at the thing they want, which is freedom. And so you might expect as the story progresses that they would somehow integrate that quest for freedom and make them realize like, oh, we actually want the freedom, not the Vespa. And like by the end, it's like, it's not really the Vespa, it's the friends you made along the way. Right. It's like, it's that sort of thing. Like, yeah. That's what you want, but they never really quite made the characters cognizant of that desire that they had. And then like halfway through the film, towards the end of the second act, actually, they throw in this thing that like, oh, Luca also wants to go to school. And it just kind of felt like it's too late to be throwing that in there. Now, if they had gone like from the first scene where he's like shepherding and he like lays down on a rock and he's like looking up at the stars or, you know, something. I mean, you can't do that.
The anchovies.
But there's something like, you know, mom's like, you can't go up to the surface. And he's like, but mom, I want to look at the stars, you know? And it's like, you know, one of those kind of cliche moments.
I want to be where the people are.
That's exactly like, right.
That would be the Little Mermaid. The similarities are not lost on me,
yeah.
but I think that it was like too little too late to add something like that in. And then when the climax reaches this point where the resolution is, oh, you get to go to school. It's like, yeah, but he didn't want that till like 15 minutes ago. Like I watched a whole other movie before this. And so to me, it didn't feel as like, you know, if you look at, again, Toy Story, which, you know, we continually bring up as one of the best of Pixar.
Yeah.
The goal is clear. I'm going to get rid of Buzz because I want to be Andy's best. And everything that I do is going to be related to that quest. So to me, that feels way more impactful because not only is the main character working towards something, but what he's working for, he's dedicated to through to the end when that switch happens. So to me, it felt like Luca didn't have that clear of an arc, and he wasn't even cognizant of the thing that he really wanted. And added on top of all of that, you have like this feeling where Luca didn't even make the decision to go on water. He kind of like stumbled there and then rolled himself back into the water. And then was like, I don't know, I guess I'll go back. And yes, he kept going back, but we never got to see the moment where he decided like, I'm going to defy my parents. The moment that like Ariel decides I know what my dad says, but I'm going to sell my voice to go on the land because I want it that bad. And it's like, I'm going to defy him. And Luca never had that moment, which makes it feel more passive rather than like, oh, I'm with you because you're making a choice. It felt like the choice was made for him. And then throughout the film, Alberto kind of drags him along and pushes him into things. Does that make sense? Or am I?
No, kind of. I kind of disagree, but I also agree at the same time. It's kind of interesting. I actually kind of appreciated the naivety that they kept in the young, like the mm-hmm. young characters.
Sure.
So like they never really realized like just what it is the Vespa is to them. I mean, yeah. Like that's kind of like a kid's interpretation of like, I have a feeling and this thing gives me that feeling.
Sure.
So their goals stay very low and small. But then I guess like when Luca finds out more, he realizes that there's a larger thing out there, and the astronomy nerd in me really appreciated that was the thing.
Yeah. I knew
but,
it would.
I would also say like he did have the defiant moment just by like running away, which is actually a lot more, I think, like prevalent as a kid. You go run into the woods in your backyard and be sure. Like, oh, they'll be so sorry that I'm gone kind of thing. Unless sure. It's just me. So I guess I agree with you, but only on the grounds of like everything just was kind of underdeveloped from the start. Connor, you know, hinted at it in the beginning. It's just like, we know nothing about these people. I don't know anything about the history. Has anybody ever like murdered a sea monster?
Yeah.
Has this village yeah. of men that have
grandpa?
Harpoons on them all the time? Like is there a history of like dead sea monster people?
Right.
So,
which is a huge missed opportunity because one of our main characters is a monster hunter, and dude never hunts a monster once in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when presented with a monster, he goes,
Well, so I don't want to skip ahead because sure. I know you've got more to say and I kind of deviated. So let's go back to your list because
you're good. You're good. Okay. And I'm not going to get to all this and that's fine. So the B plot, like in terms of things feeling underdeveloped, the B plot here is the parents' quest to get Luca back, which to me seemed really two purposes. One, make audience laugh. Two, waste time until we can see Luca again because we can't think of more things for Luca to do. So that's how that came across to me. And go ahead.
And also their entire plan revolves around revealing Luca to be a sea monster to the town.
Yeah. Which they've told him continuously don't go up there because once they find out.
Yeah. So as soon as like she was like, oh, I'm gonna knock all these kids into a fountain, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, that's super dangerous. What are you doing, Maya Rudolph?
Yeah.
Well, and yes.
You may
and
as well harpoon him in the face yourself.
Right.
Right. But that's one of the things about like how underdeveloped everything is because it resolves itself so quickly and easily.
Yes.
And that to me feels lazy because so I wrote here like, everything gets resolved too easily. The parents just wander around, blah, blah, blah. They never have another meaningful encounter with Luca once he runs away until the climax. There's not like a moment where like you'd almost expect that there's because they set up this uncle character that he might go live with, you know, Uncle Phil, he's going to go live in Bel Air with him. And so they're like, we're going to send you to, you know, your auntie and your uncles in Bel Air. And he's like, okay, but then we never see the dude again. So like, you'd almost expect that at some point, what's going to happen is they're going to like capture Luca back. And, you know, like, I don't know, look, this is really like on the nose and cliche, but it's like, Alberto's like, hey, meet me at the place at noon. And he's like, I'll be there. And then like, he's on his way and then he gets captured and he can't meet Luke. He can't meet Alberto at noon because his parents took him and he's like in the fish cab to Bel Air. And like, and then he has to like escape from the fish cab to, you know, whatever. And like, smell you later. And like, you know, whatever. And like, that's the whole thing. But like, nothing ever comes of that storyline. Like, we're going to send you over there. Nothing ever happens with that, which feels weird. It's like a setup with no payoff. Or you'd almost expect like in another Pixar film, like the parents would like team up with some antagonist. It obviously wouldn't work with Ercole, but you'd have like some antagonist that they team up with. And like the antagonist would threaten Luca too far. And the parents are like, oh, what have we done? And then it would be like this thing. And like, then Luca would like defy all of them and whatever, but like none of that happens. And so, you know, what it results in is like a film that feels, for lack of a better term, but it feels like slice of life. Like it's almost like there's nothing heightened here. There's no huge dramatic stakes.
There's the stakes are way too low in my opinion.
And that's what I told my wife was because she didn't care for it either.
Yeah,
and I was like, look, there's no stakes here because if you look at any of those things that I mentioned, all the other things, the restaurant's going to be shut down. We're going into a freaking furnace. Jesse's on a plane to freaking Tokyo. Like, or we're not going to make Andy's car. He's moving and we got to make it, you know, like these are stakes. Like our world will change if we don't. But the stakes here are like, don't go up to the surface. Why? Because we said so, because you'll be in trouble, because they'll kill you. I don't know. But we never see any evidence of that. We never see anything happen. So the stakes stay low the entire time. Yeah. And Ercole, well, he's just picking on people. He's not doing anything actually villainous. And so there's nothing like, again, it's too on the nose. So I appreciate that they didn't go here. But like Julia's father is a monster hunter. So like have him freaking hunt a monster and like, you know, whatever. I appreciate that they didn't, but you know what I'm saying? Like that allows him to take on the role of the antagonist and, you know, present some real threats because they walk into her home and there's like fish people on the wall.
Yeah.
As trophies, you know? And then it's like, oh snap.
I think it was just harpoons.
How about there should have, yeah.
They
should have had it where they walk in and it's like, hey, what are we eating tonight? Mer people. And then they just have that on the cutting board. It's like, it's just like a head. And it's just
there's
like,
there's grandpa.
Yeah.
There's grandpa.
So, yeah. Okay. So I'm okay. The stakes that are there are, is literally like, you could be murdered.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So the like instrument of that threat is the fact that I can't remember the girl. What's her name?
Julia.
Yeah.
Julia.
The fact that like Julia's dad is the representation of that threat is like any tension is nullified by Alberto like going out on the boat with him multiple times. Like when he was, I was like, ooh, is this going to be like a huge tense moment? And like, he's just happily on the thing, helping him with the nets and stuff. And I'm like, what's happening right here?
Yeah.
So one of the things that I don't like about it, it's like, I don't mind slice of life stuff, especially when it's like kids doing kid things and having fun. Did you guys ever read the Gary Paulson book, Harris and Me?
Mm-mm. No.
It's literally like a autobiographical, but like changed, you know, changed the name of characters of like him as a kid when he would go visit basically his like country bumpkin cousin on his aunt and uncle's farm. And the entire book, there's no really like rhyme or reason to it. It's just a story about a summer that he spent with that cousin. Mm-hmm. And it's just them being rambunctious and ridiculous and peeing on electric fences and all this stuff. And like, so there's no point to it, but like,
it's just kid stuff.
Yeah. And I guess it's like coming of age because, you know, by the end of the summer, they've progressed as characters, and that's fine. And I would be fine if the movie went that way and then like earned it, because they tried to throw in all these like themes. Like what do the parents represent? What, like helicopter parenting or something like that?
Yeah,
like,
I guess.
Sheltering your children. So then like what kind of,
I mean, they just don't want him to run away. It's pretty standard.
Right. Yeah. The story is, hey kids, defy your parents when they just want to keep you safe.
But also the second lesson is your parents are stupid, because if you try to run away, they'll have your uncle show up and take you to an area of the ocean you cannot survive in.
Yes, correct.
He would throw that out the window. But that character, by the way, was the best one in the movie. And the fact that he was only in first one freaking scene is ridiculous.
Yeah,
I know.
One of the things, again, like, I don't think the ending was earned, and I think it was glossed over to the point where the message they're trying to deliver is completely like nullified. So, you know, the director and people involved in it can say what they want. Like, I really feel like the movie is a strong metaphor for basically like admitting who you are in whatever capacity, you know, like trans, gay, any on the LGBTQ spectrum, even down to like, you know, people with autism or something, like anything like that could be perceived by
finding your people. And
the whole message about that type of stuff isn't supposed to be that you're supposed to prove your worth and your value before you're accepted,
right?
But that's exactly what they make the characters do. Like, they go across the finish line, they won the race, wow, look, the sea monster people did this thing, and they also care about this girl, like, okay, we'll accept you. And the whole time I was just like, what?
You won our local race. Only now, like, thank God, because now you shall
now
be spared.
You've proven your value, your worth, and that like we can relate to you. Like, now you're accepted, and I was just like, that's
right.
So
totally not the point.
Well, and it should. You're right. It should give way to like a larger climax, which is the townspeople with, you know, angry like torches and pitchforks and whatever, and like we're gonna kill you basically, and like, you know, charging them back up the hill or who knows what. Mm-hmm. But like, it should end with like that classic Disney like rainstorm and thunder and lightning and like fire, and you know, like that's how it should end. You're right. And only to eventually have the entire town realize the error of their ways by something. I don't know why, but something, right?
But what maybe it ends up being is one guy going, I accept them.
It's fine. Maybe it's that like half of the town ends up being merpeople, and they're like, oh, all of our friends, like these are, I don't know.
Yeah.
But like, you know, who knows?
But all they ended up doing was just have two lesbian ones in the background.
Yeah.
Which is, come on. That's exactly what that was. Like, it is. I appreciated it for that.
We have to move on to the other movies, but I got to say this.
Yeah.
This movie works best as that allegory. as LGBTQ, yeah, yeah, because anything else, like at the end where he's like, you know, you got me off the island. That's what I needed. It's like that carries zero emotional weight unless we're talking about coming out, you know, that's, you know, like you're such a good friend for getting me off the island. Like, sure, that's good too. But like, I just don't buy the emotional connection without that layer to it.
Yeah.
Well, and the last thing I'll touch on that allegory is the whole scene where he says it's a sea monster and basically throws him under the bus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like a classic, classic happenstance that happens amongst people who might be coming out, and somebody who's not ready will just
throw everybody just out them. Yeah.
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 Yeah. And I love that shot where he feels so monstrous after that.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is cool. Like, that's like the coolest shot in the movie. Yeah.
The harpoons barely miss him and he doesn't even care. He's like, I can't fucking believe you just did that.
Yeah. I actually felt something by the cinematography. Yep. It wasn't the narrative at that point. Yeah. It was just like the actual filmmaking prowess. All the
shot design. Yeah.
The last thing that I want to say, and I have a bunch of other notes, so feel free to print my brain after, but the last thing I want to say, this is no bearing on my review, is just something that I noticed halfway through the film. I leaned over to my wife and I said, wait, is this Corey, Sean, and Topanga? And I'm convinced it freaking is, because Alberto has a deadbeat dad and he's like this mischievous dude who's always leading Luca around and giving him bad advice. And all we need is his dad to come back and be like, hi there, Sean. That's all we need. And then freaking Julia is a bookworm and like a weird kid who is constantly presented as a wall between the two male characters.
Don't you other her, Dustin?
Who's Minkus?
Who's Minkus? We don't know. and then freaking at the dang end of the whole movie, Luca literally goes to meet the world.
Oh, wow.
Fish boy meets world. That's what this movie is. Fish boy meets world.
Wait, that's under the Disney umbrella, right? They can't be plagiarizing.
Yeah.
I just want to know who Feeny is. I need Feeny. Anyway, that I thought about that halfway through the film, and I was like, I'm convinced this is true.
Wow.
They were watching too much Boy Meets World when they were writing this.
Wow.
I mean, although I guess it could also be Harry, Ron, and Hermione. It's pretty darn close to that, too.
The stock trio.
It's a stock trio.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's Luca. And that's our thoughts on Luca. We're going to hit the break real quick. I'm going to go turn down the thermostat. When we come back, we're going to talk about I Am Mother. And yeah, that's it. God, I can't fucking nail this break ever. We'll be right back. Shit.
I mean, that seems like you nailed it.
Yeah.
On the Hoopercast Movie Hour. So nothing I'm going to recommend for streaming this coming week. Everything's pretty bare. Like I said, on June 25th, we've got the final season of Bosch on Amazon Prime, so I'll be checking that out with the missus. But I will probably not be doing that until after the Olympics are over. I'm having a lot of fun just watching the Olympic trials and especially the track and field events. We got a Peacock membership, so we could, you know, find those a little bit easier. So that's what I'm going to be watching. I got to say, that's my recommendation as an American.
You should just rewatch The Office.
I watched that last year though, the whole thing.
I watched it like four times last year.
You're going to be,
that's me in Community.
I watched like the bulk of the show in like the first 6 weeks that my son was born, because I had a bunch of time in the middle of the night that I had to kill.
Yeah.
And I did it. I discovered wireless earbuds. It was great. Anyways, okay. So the title, I've titled this episode, I don't typically do this beforehand usually, but I've already titled this episode, The Future is Depressing. The reason I thought that this applied to all the films we're talking about tonight is because Luca represents kind of the future of, you know, what we're going to accept.
Pixar.
With Pixar so far. We've got a science fiction film here. This film is called I Am Mother.
Daughter, I know you're frightened, but you have no need to be. Have I ever done you harm?
It's just a matter of time.
This woman doesn't care about any future but her own.
She's very dangerous. Dangerous.
I'm never gonna hurt you. Hurt you.
She's a risk we can't take.
We have to go now.
Trust me.
Trust me.
Daughter, your whole life I've taught you to see the bigger picture.
Everything I do is to protect you.
I'm not seeing the trailer, but like the audio, that's terrible. I don't remember seeing the trailer, but everything in that was like stock trailer sound effects.
Yeah, it was pretty standard there for that. I must say, I Am Mother is a 2019 film. It's an Australian film directed by Grant Sputor, written by Michael Lloyd Green, starring Clara Rugard, Rose Byrne, and Hilary Swank. This is a sci-fi film about a little girl who is raised by a robot. And the robot's whole job is to select these embryos to actually be express cooked, you know, like within like a, what, like an hour, you got a baby.
Like 24 hours.
Yeah. Okay. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just turn it on when you go to work and come home and
come back.
And there's a person. So, the main character is just known as daughter, played by Clara Rugard. And so she grows up to, I have no clue. They say teenage, but I swear to God, I thought that the amount of days they said passed amounted to like 30 years. So I was a little confused.
Okay.
Did you do that?
Hold on.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to let you finish before I just erupt on this movie.
Okay. So this whole time I was like, gosh, she looks kind of young to be 30. So the film kind of goes through daughter kind of, we cut straight to her being her current age, and daughter is kind of curious about why they can't go outside. There's been this vague doomsday or extinction event. It's not safe to go outside. And then the power goes out or whatever one day, and she and there's a knocking on the outside of the door, and there's a human played by Hilary Swank who needs to get in. She's been shot. So letting her in sets forth all this chain of events to where you're not sure who is lying to our protagonist. Is it mother who's been raising her and taking care of her and never harmed her whole life? Or is it, I guess woman is her name. I guess that's what they call her. Yeah. Woman. When I'm just gonna say Hilary Swank, woman sounds weird. When woman says this, you know, she'll be trust woman because she's also a human being and has her actual best interests at heart. And so that's kind of the dynamic that's at play, these split loyalties, throughout the film. And that's how it progresses. So I'm going to go first real quick. And then we will pick apart the other side of this. I really liked I Am Mother. I know you two did not as much, Kellen, you especially. But I remember finishing it and going, yeah, I'd give that like 4 stars. I really liked it. I think that any film that can kind of hold my attention and do a lot with without dialogue, I like science fiction as a genre. I like how contained it is. I liked what I perceived as a non-telegraphed plot. At least it did a good job of not making me think about the structure too much during it. And I liked the ending, and I was satisfied with the way it turned out. I'd watch it again. That being said, I've been alone in this star rating. So
you're not.
Oh, Dustin.
No,
go.
I gave it 4 stars.
And we'll get to you next, Kellen.
I'm just going to say I gave it 4 stars too. Okay. I'll tell you why later. Kellen,
okay. Now, Kellen, you go.
Okay. All right. So let me preface this by saying when it comes to sci-fi stuff, I'm kind of a huge, like a way bigger stickler because I care about the themes more in that. And I care about the smartness and the tightness of the script and everything. I didn't hate this movie. I'd give it a 3.
Yeah. This is on Netflix, by the way, for anyone who wants to know where to watch it.
Yeah. It's very well made, very well acted. The character of Mother is really well realized.
Yeah.
With some really great CG and stuff that people can really relate to because it looks a lot like that, like Boston Dynamics yeah. robotics stuff.
Yep.
That is all over everybody's feeds and everything. So really what it comes down to is that, like, the things that are wrong with it, I'm going to heighten them and be all frustrated with them. And I probably won't ever watch the movie again.
Yeah.
So story time, and you guys all got this text, but I sat down and the movie started and 9 minutes in, I sent a text to the two of these gentlemen. And I said, I'm pretty sure I know what the twist of this movie is 9 minutes into the film. And so what I think they did that blew it is I don't think spoilers.
yep. Spoilers.
Spoilers. I don't think that they were saying that Hilary Swank is the same as the girl. She's just another embryo that was raised to a baby by Mother. But they cast a girl that I thought they are casting this as a young Hilary Swank. Immediately, I was like, she's not the first girl. And then the text says 13,000 days, which is like 37 years. Yeah. So I was like, oh, she's absolutely not the first. Can't wait to like,
yeah.
Can't wait to hear about like all the other, you know, babies and what happened. I bet you they were killed by Mother because who knows? They weren't like
this is dawning on
perfect samples of humans. So that's what I thought 9 minutes into the film. And I was like, Hilary Swank's character, because I've seen trailers, she comes in and is opposed to Mother. She is going to have been a child, an embryo or whatever that escaped or something happened. And literally that's the plot of the film. And I got it 9 minutes in. And so basically everything that unfolded, I was just like, come on, throw me a damn curveball. So the big like linchpin of the film is when she sees the ashes and the jawbone of prior humans. Mm-hmm. And then they do what movies do when they think the audience is stupid. They show those flashbacks of the child being raised. It's like, get it. It's one of these. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I just felt like the movie didn't trust its audience enough to hold that shit back. And they felt they needed to seed stuff when anybody who's paying attention and is watching this as a sci-fi fan loves those minor details immediately picks up on it. And I'm not, this isn't to cast aspersions on you, Connor, cause you even noticed that's like 30 something years. Yeah. What's going on.
I was arrogant enough to think that I saw a mistake that every single person who worked on the film missed.
No, but instead it was a clue that was less a clue and more like screaming in your face exactly
like,
what.
Yeah, hiding in plain sight. Like you see it and you go, that doesn't really, she doesn't look like she's 30 something. Then you just go, maybe they'll explain it later. And then you just forget about it.
Yeah. So then literally everything that happens in between all that, I think is really well done. Mm-hmm. So it could have been a really good movie if they just didn't think we were so stupid. And that's one of my biggest gripes. And I swear that has to come down to some sort of meddling, you know, it needs to reach a wider audience, blah, 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 blah. But other than that, I just, you know, it was a really good story that got marred by, for me, being completely, completely predictable. The nature of, you know, Mother and, you know, the story of what happened and everything like that unfolded. And I got to learn about that and everything like that. But, I just found it overall frustrating that it didn't do anything to surprise me when it posited itself as a mystery.
Yeah. So I'm sort of with you, sort of not. So I also noticed the day count, and I did the math in my head, and I was like, yeah, that doesn't add up, because the actress was born in 97. I literally went to IMDb to look it up. I'm like, how old is she supposed to be?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, all right, so here's the deal. I knew this girl's not the first from the beginning, right? Which one of the film's fatal flaws was having that date count. If they removed it, it would have been way better. One, I mean, it was on screen for a few seconds. Just
it makes you wonder why.
It has to be studio notes. It has to be studio notes. That's all I can think.
They're like, put this number out there in days, because most people aren't going to be smart enough to do the math and find out that that's 30 something
years. Where
are
we going to be showing this? Oh, on streaming, where people have access to Google Calculator.
And they can pause it. Yeah, exactly. And go to IMDb and look up Clara Rugard's age.
But also, they are doing Hilary Swank a favor by saying that she's 37 years old. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that.
Well, yes. Well, so here's the thing, too. So while I did not, I didn't for a second think that this was the first girl, I did not immediately think that Hilary Swank was one of the daughters. And here's why. I thought this was just cynical brain. Hey, we can get Hilary Swank. Cast her. We can afford her. She's available. Do it. Like, that's what I thought. I didn't think like it was purposeful. So I thought, okay, she literally is, I'm going to take her at her word. She is whatever, especially as the story keeps progressing. And I'm like, why isn't she saying something about that?
Yeah.
If, you know, so I had no thought like, that she was a daughter. Then what happens is you see the next clue is you see daughter go in and look at the files for the babies, and one says aborted, but she doesn't see the other one. We only see the one.
Yeah.
And right. And so I'm like, oh, okay, go ahead.
So I thought you were going to bring up the massive red flag clue that they threw out there is when woman was explaining to daughter, you know, her history, she's like, when I was found, they found me as a baby. And I'm like, okay, mother had one of the babies cooked for 24 hours, stuck it outside where she knew where she knew humans would find it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they don't have to do that.
Yeah. So this is where I think the third act to me falls apart. So we recently reviewed Sound of Metal, which I really loved. Mm-hmm. I gave it 4 stars, even though I said the third act betrays it and it's not a good third act. I would say this is like an okay third act. But it could have been a lot better. And one of the ways that it could have been a lot better is they tried to do this thing where I think they thought they were being smart by being ambiguous, and they're not going to like come right out and say that Hilary Swank is a daughter, but they're going to like get pretty close. But like, I guess if you wanted to say she's not, I guess you could, she is. And so if you're going to be ambiguous, you got to be ambiguous. And I don't think the film was ambiguous enough to allow audiences to make up their own mind, but it also didn't plant its flag in the ground and say, well, this is our story. And so for that, like waffling in it, like almost like, I don't know, maybe we'll get to do a sequel. I don't know. Maybe some people will like that. Maybe some people won't. We just won't say, but we'll just kind of strongly hint. And it's like, you kind of have to do one or the other. You either do it or you don't do it. And so it felt weird to me.
Yeah.
But then the main thing is I felt like mother's plot, like her whole idea almost doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, so I get the idea that she's raising daughter to be, you know, this next big thing in humanity. Like you are the perfect evolved,
yeah,
controlled human, completely ethical, completely whatever. And yet, it seems like one of mother's things is like, well, humans are violent and it's left unchecked, but then it's like, kill me. And so I'm like, what? And so to me, I was just like, I'm not quite sure how this furthers mother's, like, her plan, because it seems clear to me that by the end, obviously mother is still around and she says, I'll be around if you need me, I won't, boom. And like, so she's still around. Yeah. So the thought is like, one of two things just happened. Either Mother just rolled over and said, okay, it's yours now, or she didn't. And I think the next scene on the beach proves that she didn't roll over.
Right.
So if she didn't roll over, then how does her allowing daughter to shoot her and take control of this compound, how does it mean anything? And how does it really further Mother's plan, which I guess would be explored in a sequel? It's I don't know. And that's the it's symbolic. Yeah, but
that's the
but
only thing. You have to think that that her whole idea is that the only thing that I cannot teach daughter effectively on my own is how to have a healthy sense of skepticism. How do I teach her that everything I taught her is straightforward, but also raise her not to just simply follow everything I told her to do? How do I teach her to think for herself when I'm the only source of information? I can't, but I can manipulate her to where she reaches that lesson and she'll just never know that I orchestrated the lesson, but I have good intentions because I am Mother. So it is this veiled but that's still like a big old con game. But just like you said, shooting and killing one of Mother's bodies doesn't mean anything plot wise. It's just more like you need to let go. You know, she needed to let go of her and let go of her attachment to her or whatever she symbolizes. Like that's her growing up or coming of age.
Yeah, it is purely symbolic, but I have to wonder on a story narrative level for daughter and her trajectory as a character. Mm-hmm. Just to simplify this in non-science fiction terms, my mother is abusive and I need to kill my mother, but I also know my mother is weird and will just inhabit another body. Well, then shooting my mother doesn't really provide much catharsis.
Out of context, that sentence was
strange. A doozy. Right?
I honestly know what you're getting at, but I still feel like it works on that level because I think daughter simultaneously reaches that catharsis while also knowing there's a certain amount of this that's artificial though, because
still out.
It's like, okay, I learned the lesson. Good job, mother. But I also know that I'm ultimately not in control of this kid's destinies. I have a role to play and I have my own little corner of this new world that I'm in charge of, but I still can't determine my own destiny.
Which is why it's depressing. Yes. I reviewed this on Letterboxd, and one of the things I said about it was that it almost makes me want to see a sequel. Mm-hmm. If only just to be like, okay, continue the story. What is Mother going to do from here? Because she's clearly still looming out there, and daughter clearly is just going to incubate a bunch of babies. And I guess just be on the thing with a ton of babies and being like, look at all these babies. That's great. But now what?
Right.
I'm just imagining hundreds of
all these babies. What am I going to do with these babies?
Oh, look at these babies. I don't got enough formula for the babies. It's just kind of I almost feel like the movie's not over. So that to me is there's a climax for sure and a resolution, but the resolution leaves so much room for a sequel that it almost feels unresolved in a weird way. So that's where I'm just saying that third act to me is a little bit weaker, if only because it doesn't provide what is necessary to close out this story and make me feel like I've seen the complete story, and B, as aforementioned, it does not, it wants you to think it's ambiguous, but it isn't, which is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beyond this sticking points that we've been talking about, there's just little minor things thrown in here and there. Like this robot has this master plan that's years long, but she's making really stupid mistakes and has this entire facility under her control, but has no surveillance except for audio surveillance in one room just because it's convenient to the plot.
Go ahead.
And then at the end, the whole reveal, which I'd been wondering, I was like, when are they going to say that Hilary Swank's character was a daughter? When are they going to say it? When are they going to say it? And I, for a while, I was like, oh, I guess I was wrong. And then at the end, you know, when you have to have your character who just died but is now alive, so nullifying that. I mean, we already talked about that. But yep. Then, like, does a villain monologue to fill in the blanks of what should have just been able to have been surmised? I was like, don't do that. So the movie is just full of don't do that's and things they could have taken out and just done smarter. And I just feel like somebody effed with it because the rest of it was so competently made and well acted. And it's just a bummer.
I'll say this. So in regards to the surveillance thing, I had surmised early in the film that there's no way that that robot wasn't surveilling everything. What I had inferred from the end was that everything that had happened, there were no mistakes. Mother made zero mistakes.
Yeah. It was my plan all along.
It was all the plan all along.
Yeah.
But to your point, like, it's an incredibly well-performed film. I love Mother's design because I think it's all at once believable and super threatening. Like, to me, it's one of the scariest robots in recent memory. Yeah. Like, there's that moment where that robot runs, like, and I saw a review on Letterboxd that was like, robot runs like Tom Cruise, 1 star. and I'm like, it does run like Tom Cruise. But I'm like, that's scary, dude. Like, that reminds me of that dude from Get Out. That's just like, no, straight towards the camera. Like, he's just like, no. And, I just realized I made like 18 Hooper noises in a row right there. anyway, the whole point is, I forget the point, but the point is it is a well-made movie. Like, I love the visual style. I love the design work. I think the ship or the space station, it's not a space station, the whatever you call it, the bunker.
The bunker is
well designed and I enjoyed a whole heck of a lot about it. The production design, you know, everything's great. The visual effects are fantastic.
Yep.
This is evidently a practical suit most of the time.
Yep.
And then replaced every so often. And you can feel it. It feels real. It feels like it's there. And that's just, it's just great. And so I really recommend it on those levels. Again, I think that third act leaves a little to be desired, but like, I was all on board, even with the telegraphing, although I will say, get rid of that day count. Like, that's too much.
Did anybody else find it really weird that the young actress just was Hilary Swank? Like, did nobody else got that vibe?
I mostly thought that the casting decision was like, she needs to feel a maternal connection or a possible maternal connection to this character. So they should look similar to each other. But that was about it for me.
She even like acted like her, like a bit stiff, you know, not well, saying her act.
Yeah. I had wondered at one point in the film whether Hilary Swank was going to be revealed to be her actual mother and that the thing was going to be like, how is this possible? I'm the one that gave the embryos. I'm the mother. And like, the whole thing was going to be mother versus mother at some point. And like, I didn't know where it was going, but like,
I wrote that off as an impossibility because I would have thrown my TV.
Yeah. I would not have accepted that as well.
Yeah. Whoa. The movie's called I Am Mother. Which mother?
Which mother's the mother? It turns out Clara Ruggard is her daughter is actually mother from the future. She's her own mother. Oh, and they're all mothers. And, I don't know, man. I was on board though for a long time.
I'm going to inject one more film into this episode because I overstacked the show. I overproduced the show and I didn't have time to fit this into the actual recording. So I need to get in and get out with this last film. So the third film that was on the agenda tonight is the documentary on Hulu called I Am Greta.
I have been invited to the United Nations Summit. And since I don't fly, it's going to be a challenge. Despite all the beautiful words and promises, our political leaders have failed us.
Some people are so arrogant to think they can change climate.
She faces a really, really tough challenge.
Nothing is happening, so we must do what we can.
We will not stop until we are done.
I Am Greta is a 2020 documentary. You can see this on Hulu right now. It's directed by Nathan Grossman, and it is about Greta Thunberg, who is a Swedish. I'm sure if you're listening or to this far into the episode, you know who Greta Thunberg is. She is I believe she's now 18 years old. She's but she's an environmental activist from Sweden, and she gained international attention in beginning in 2018, 2019, where she spent all of her Fridays picketing in front of the Swedish parliament, and in other cities and other climate summits, about the horrible situation that we find ourselves in with climate change. I gave this film 3.5 stars. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I saw a Rotten Tomatoes review. I think that Rotten Tomatoes sums it up pretty well. Their summary is, audiences might not learn anything new from I Am Greta, but its stirring chronicle of the youth activists' efforts is inspiring. And I agree with that. I know who Greta Thunberg is. Although I did learn new things. I didn't know that much about her. I just, knew what I saw in the headlines. Greta Thunberg has Asperger's syndrome. That is why she is, as someone who is very passionate about the climate, found it a fascinating subject, dove herself into the research, the numbers. Her father says she has a near photographic memory, so she's very educated on the subject. She's not a climatologist. She's not a meteorologist. She's not a scientist. She's just a very well-researched activist. But that matters because she, unlike many people in leadership, has the courage to actually stick by her convictions and speak truth to power. So support or even liking her seems to be a politicized topic. Like, for me to say I like Greta Thunberg, it makes me sound like a super woke liberal person, or leftist, or whatever the hell you would call me, as well as saying I disagree with Greta Thunberg, or God knows the other hateful things that were said to her. Some of them pictured in this documentary, people calling her mentally ill, mentally retarded. It's like, that's not what Asperger's is. And it's really insulting to dismiss someone outright just because they're on the spectrum. But like associating, well, your opinion of her ultimately automatically puts you in one group or the other, which is stupid. And I'm kind of sick of that binary lens we want to see ourselves in and put others into. I don't want to talk politics on the show. I try not to get into that. And I don't want to alienate anybody by going too much to what my personal politics are. All I'll say is that before the documentary, I knew relatively little about Greta Thunberg herself, and I knew what I thought about her publicly. And coming away from the documentary, I have a different view of her. I think that if you're looking for that, or if you're curious about her, it definitely humanizes her. She's a kid who is really passionate about an issue, but also practices what she preaches. She travels everywhere by train in this. When she's invited to the climate summit in New York City, she doesn't fly because flying is wasteful and a pollutant. So she and her dad go by boat across the ocean to New York City, and it looks horrible. It looks like it sucks, and she hates it. But that's the life she chooses to preach and live, and she actually follows through. So the main takeaway from this documentary for me was, if you have convictions, stand behind them. And if you can't stand behind your convictions, you should be careful about what you do preach, because maybe you're full of shit, or maybe you talk the talk, but you don't walk the walk, like the politicians and the presidents and the prime ministers that she talks to throughout this documentary, and whom she accuses of lying to the youth and lying to their constituency, that you said you would do this and you didn't, or you talk about wanting to improve and do better, but you won't. I don't come away with it having a radically different view of climate change itself. But I do come away with it with a renewed sense of wanting to personally do what I can to not be wasteful, to reduce my carbon footprint. And the sad reality, and if you're listening, going like, oh, fucking whatever, Connor. No, you whatever. I mean, there's things that we can do to do better. There's things that I do think most developed countries and governments can do to do better. They just won't because it threatens profit margins. And, but the reality is, and it's discussed a little bit in the film, but a big question on the climate change issue is, can regular people afford to live sustainably? You know, she even talks about like the reason I'm going by boat. Another reason is to sort of show people how unsustainable traveling, you know, not flying is. Flying is too much a part of how our economy works. And it sucks because it's so bad for the environment, but we can't just stop flying because the economy, the global economy would fall apart. And how much that sucks and how far we are into one way of doing things. And now we know that that way of doing things is harmful, but we don't have an alternative yet. And so anyone who does come in and says, oh, well, you know, here's the alternative. We just do this. You know, oh, here's the left solution. Let's just turn everything over to electric overnight. No, we can't do that because it would be super expensive and people wouldn't have time to adjust. And here's the right solution. No, just shut up. Climate change doesn't exist. We're going to keep everything the same and, you know, YOLO. It's like, well, we can't do that because we do have the science and it is contributing and we should probably do something about it. So what is the middle ground? And the middle ground seems to be if countries can afford it, incentivize it, fund it, subsidize it, whatever you need to do. But her whole point is that you guys do what you're going to do. You're doing terrible damage and you can stop it today, or you can change today, but you need to change today. But no matter what you do, the youth are more and more of the young people are on this side of the issue. And if you don't make change, we will, whether we do it through action, through picketing, through activism, or we actually like get into government ourselves and make changes when, you know, 20, 30 years from now, when it's definitely too late, or, you know, I say too late in quotes. You know, the idea being that like that, this is how more and more people feel about the specific issue. And I'm not sure where to go from that thought. I guess that's my little soapbox on I Am Greta. I came away with it with a lot of respect for her as a person, as a human being, and as someone with beliefs. And mad props to Greta Thunberg. She's taken a lot of shit that she doesn't deserve, and just for speaking her mind about something she's passionate about, and actually giving a shit and trying to do something about it. So I cannot fault anybody for doing that. That's how I feel about the documentary, I Am Greta. It's on Hulu. You can watch it right now. We'll do this again soon, Kellen. And I'll try to pick some happier films.
I enjoyed watching both of them. I mean, like I said, the point is to come on here and pick it apart. Yeah. So.
Yep.
All right, then. Well, until next time, we'll pick something else apart next time. And then, that'll be fun. I guess I would tease what we're watching next, but we're not sure yet. So we'll telegraph that at some other point in the future, the depressing future.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. Good night.
Good night.